Before rock and roll, before pop, before everything, there was the blues, the music of struggle, triumph, and truth. Welcome to Talking Blues, where we honor the legends and tell the stories that shape modern music. Here's your host, Matt Cooper.
Danny Boy Phelan, multi-instrumentalist, young fella, old soul blues man, definitely one of the rising stars in Canada's roots scene. He's got banjo in the blood, gospel in the bones, a real deep love for that raw, ragged Delta sound. Ragtime jazz, old-time spirituals. Let's get into it now with Danny Boy Phelan. Danny, tell me about the first memory you have. Take me back to that first memory you have of hearing music.
First, hearing music or hearing the blues?
Well, music first, because the blues are going to come, but it probably wasn't the blues you heard first.
Yeah, definitely wasn't. You know, my dad, he collected a lot of vinyls. Like, he was a kid in the 70s. And, well, I mean, he was a teenager in the 70s, so he liked all that kind of like acid rock stuff. So that's what I got into first, you know, like, a lot of Jimi Hendrix and the Who was his biggest one. He used to follow them around, so he'd be pumping, you know, rock, classic rock music when I was a kid, and I just loved it. And I think a lot of people go down that rabbit hole, you know, they start at classic rock, or, you know, maybe even metal, and then they start going down. So I mean, that's my first like real memory of music. But I mean, as the littlest kid, my first actual album was Weird Al. it had a dinosaur on the front. It's like the Jurassic Park logo, but it was his head. That was my first. I used to listen to that album on repeat.
Al does a great job of mimicking the different voices and putting the styles together with a little bit of humor. I've always loved Weird Al.
Yeah, his musicianship he's very, very talented. Yeah, that was definitely my first album that I fell in love with. Still got it kicking around.
I saw Al jump up at George Fest and do a number or two really strong. Donnie put together about 10 years ago, Donnie Harrison. Anyways, okay, so your dad is a classic rock follower. He's following The Who. He's rocking. He's probably got the long hair, that Roger Daltrey look of the 70s, the gremlin with the hockey stick stripe on the side. So you're taking this in. You're catching the second hand, which is a wonderful way to grow up. Now tell me about how, you know, I mean, all roads lead to the blues. This is what we all discover as we go along our journey. Tell me about your journey to the blues from classic rock.
Well, it starts, I would say, as a teenager. I was probably about 13. Things with my family were really on, like, you know, on, they just weren't very good. My parents were kind of splitting up, and my dad's story in itself is something else. So, I mean, that might be something to touch on. He was a character, man, but, you know, he, because of addiction and stuff like that, put us through an awful lot. I found myself, you know, kind of homeless in a way at the age of 14. So when that was all going on, I was at a buddy's house. He put on a tape of Big Bill Brunzi, and the music that Big Bill was singing was just, I felt like it was written for me. You know, like all the stuff I'd never heard anybody sing about the human experience the way this guy was, you know, and it just hit me like a rock. Like, I heard a couple of his tunes and I started crying. It just hit me so hard. And ever since that day, the blues has been the biggest part of my life, you know, and it's something, you know, when you're a kid, you go through all these different kinds of music that you like, but that's just the number one for me. It stayed there ever since I heard the Big Bill recording. It's been the blues for me, man. You know, but yeah, that's my first experience, anyhow, with hearing a real blues recording.
And so then, was it the guitar that you picked up? Was it the acoustic guitar that you first picked up? Yeah.
I had already been messing around with the electric guitar because I was listening to Hendrix, and I just started getting into Stevie. But that acoustic blues is what, like, really, really did it for me. But I was already, you know, I was already at the age of 14, I was playing, you know, Texas Flood and all this stuff, all this, you know, crazy electric stuff. So I pretty much completely dropped all of that when I heard like Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee and Pete Seeger even. When I heard all that music, I kind of think I ended up selling my really cheap electric guitar for a really cheap acoustic guitar.
So it was the acoustic blues that spoke to you. I guess your focus really went back to maybe like the early 20s. So Charlie Patton, those kind of guys, these are the originators. It kind of went from there.
Yeah. You know, in my opinion, there's nothing more more painful than hearing some of these work camp songs of just guys singing in the 20s. And, you know, some of the stuff Alan Lomax recorded, you know, you got a guy singing that's going to be like put on death row in a couple of days. You know, he's going to be hanged in a couple of days. And he's singing the blues in a way you just can't find in any other recording. You know, that to me, that's like real pain. That's the human pain. And I just can't find that in any other kind of music. You know, that's, you're just hearing what that guy's going through in these recordings. And I know that really speaks to me a lot.
It's the cry of oppression. And a form of release for these guys. And it is so real, so genuine, so gritty. I can see how that would speak directly to you. And, you know, some of these guys, the virtuosity that came out of sheer frustration, I guess. And you know, for the guys in the 20s and 30s, it was about making a living. You know, I mean, they could be a sharecropper, which wasn't a very good deal at all. You had the Jim Crow laws going on, which was just not very much better than slavery at the time. And so they really didn't have much of a chance. So I guess if a blues musician, at least you could say, you know, what you were doing, where you were going, and nobody could tell you who, what, and when.
You know, it's kind of funny when you get into all this old music, you sort of inadvertently turn into a historian as well. You know, I've always had a real interest in history. I mean, the two interests kind of just collided in a natural way. They did, you know, I didn't get into the blues because of a history kind of rabbit hole. I got into it because emotionally what I was going through at the time, that music spoke to me. So, you know, there's so many ways to get into it. And like you said, every road really leads to the blues. So it's so true.
It really does. And when, you know, as a musician, when you pick up an instrument and you can reproduce the sound that some of your heroes have made and actually hear it in your own ear and play it with your own hands and produce that sound, that's a unique feeling. And, you know, I've watched you play, Danny. You are a virtuoso. That doesn't come by happenstance. That comes by hours and I would say weeks, months, and years in the woodshed. And for if you're not a musician, the woodshed is a euphemism for practicing your butt off all the time. And so that's what we call the woodshed. That's the process of developing excellence in anything, really. It's the same concept. So, and that fascinates me when I watch you play. I'm very interested, and I know a lot of our blues fans are. Tell me about that process, man, that woodshed process. Like when I see you go up and down the fretboard, making those sweet sounds with absolute ease, I know that there's a lot of practice that goes into that. Give me some insights into that. Some more than just scales, man. Talk to me about that.
Yeah. You know, for me, it really started when I started listening to a lot of the string band music and a lot of the black groups in the 20s and 30s that were playing string band music were playing like jug bands, and you know, their kind of blues version of what a lot of these string bands were playing. They have all the instruments in there. You know, there's mandolins playing, banjos, harmonicas, fiddles. And I think at the time I listened to these recordings, like I'd say maybe specifically like Memphis Jug Band or like Cannon's Jug Stompers, hear this stuff and you're like, I want to be able to play everything that these guys are playing at the time. You know, I want to be able to play every instrument that I'm hearing. And so, you know, you kind of just pick up the banjo. But say like the banjo, even for instance, to learn the clawhammer technique, you know, I sat there for days, just sitting there for hours and hours, just trying to get your hand to do that technique, you know? And it takes so much time, and I think that's kind of what deters people too with music, because you know it does take a lot of practice. But the beauty of all this stuff too is that it's not overly difficult to play some of it. Like you can really be somewhat of a beginner and jump in and play a 1-4-5. So that's why I like this kind of stuff, because it's, you know, it's inclusive.
And so then you can change keys and you can take it all over the neck.
That's the thing is, you know, 1-4-5 is you can play it in any key. And, you know, if you're playing G, you just got to figure out where your chords are. So G is G, C, D. And, you know, G, your 1, C, your 4, and D, your 5. So, you know, you just got to figure out where all the chords are. I don't know how to read music at all. Honestly, I can't read a single note, but I know the theory. You know, I know where the notes are and where the chords are, and that's all you need to know. That stuff just comes with time. You know, I don't know how to read music at all, man.
But shapes all over the keyboard. Yeah, I mean, you've got shapes that you use everywhere.
Yeah. Well, you learn the basic chords, and you can kind of apply them all over the place. You know, like you learn like these triangle chords, and you can kind of just play them wherever, but
I play the bass, and it's a stringed instrument, and I found the slower that I go through a process, the very slowest I can do it, the more of an imprint it makes on this old brain. And if the slower I can do it, the better I get at it. And then I can finally get it up to tempo. And if I work on it for a while in that old wood shit, I can get up to 150 beats a minute or whatever it is.
Yeah.
And so I've often found, and whether it's martial arts or it's keyboard finesse, I find the taking it really slow and letting your brain really soak in the motion allows for that trigger memory, if you will, when you're under stress or on the stage, under the spotlight.
Yeah, that's the thing, you know, and if it's difficult, it's probably worth doing, you know, and you want to learn songs that are going to push you to learn new stuff, but you don't want to kill yourself either. You know, you got to take your time with it, because some of these guys, you know, you see picking really fast, like Doc Watson and all this, you know, these songs that they learn, they probably learn so slow. And over time, that just picks up to the point where they can play it, you know, in circles behind their heads. You just got to learn it slow.
A crawl before you can walk. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's nothing new under the sun there.
Yeah.
So your dad was going through a rough time, and subsequently you were put into a rough situation. You're a teenager, and being a teenager is hard enough on its own. You know, with the hormones blazing, synapses blazing everywhere anyways. Yeah. And so you're getting a hold of this roots music from a friend of yours, and it's speaking to you. This cry of oppression from this classic blues artist is touching you. You're relating to it. You're thinking, wow, was this written for me? This guy's speaking my language, kind of thing. And so you've taken your electric guitar and you've swapped it for an acoustic, and now you're listening to jug music as well. And you're saying, okay, you know what? I'm going to learn to play every instrument in that band. I don't just want to play the licks. I want to play everything. And so I guess that kind of rounded approach is kind of helped to bring you where you are today. Is that a fair statement?
Yeah. You know, sometimes things stand out to me, like a certain part of a song on a certain instrument, and that'll push me to learn that specific song on a specific instrument, you know? But guitar's one that I always really like to go back to, because I feel like I can really get what I'm trying to do out, and what I try to say in these songs, you know, like I feel like the guitar helps me kind of push that. And I think a lot of people feel that way too. Like definitely the banjo and stuff is great and not used nearly enough for the blues, but I can see why everyone plays guitar. You know, it's, there's so much you can do with it. There is really a lot.
Tell me about some of the other folks that made a big impression on you. There was Big Bill, but boy, there's a lot of folks that that were making waves in that era. Just throw a few names at us, and maybe we'll encourage you to give us a bit of a demonstration.
You know, one of my biggest influences, like, ever was Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee. Sonny Terry's harmonica playing, for some weird reason, I feel like everybody out there should be imitating Sonny Terry, but I understand why a lot of people like kind of moved on and started to get more technical. But in my opinion, he was the best harmonica player that ever lived. And a lot of my style is influenced by Sonny. But I mean, for guitar playing too, like Mississippi Fred McDowell is one that I love. He's really come back. I mean, he's been dead for years, but he's come back a lot. You know, a lot of people younger than me are listening to Fred McDowell. So it's nice to see some of these old blues guys coming back and getting popular again. Also, I listened to a lot of Leadbelly, too, back in the day. A lot of Leadbelly. The names just go on. When I was a teenager and stuff, I feel like aside from a lot of things that was going on in my family, I had kind of the trifecta of issues, and that every blues player probably in their lifetime has a problem with, and that's whiskey, women, and money. You know, and I've had a lot of trouble with all three in my lifetime. And you know, when you're young and you got those first loves and they don't work out, a certain tune always came to mind that I would crank up a whole lot when I was heartbroken. You know, they had so many recordings, those guys. I mean, they must have recorded thousands of tunes. And a lot of people, they know the ones that were on their most famous record. But I think some of the best stuff they've written is on those old obscure blues records from the 20s. And, well, I'd say not the 20s, but probably the 30s and 40s and 50s for Sonny Terry and Brownie McGee.
Like on the 78s.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, man. 78s. Yeah, you got to be careful with
the Shatter. They were calling them race records in those days. And an unfair advantage to blues artists that were trying to learn from those records because they sped them up. Not commonly known, but they sped those recordings up. So,
Yeah, it would mess with the recordings a little bit too. You know, in the early days of recording 78s, when they first started doing it, they had no way to reproduce them. So they'd have to have the musicians sit in the studio for 2 or 3 days sometimes and play the same song over and over and over again. So every single record was different. Can't even imagine doing that.
They would cut right to wax. Right. There was no mixing in those days. I think they had one knob, you know, and they'd cut right to wax. And, it's, you know, if you made a mistake, you started again.
Exactly. Yeah. The cost involved is so different. Now you just hit a button. And I mean, no offense to some people, but a lot of the music nowadays is just kind of computer noises.
Well, I guess that's both sides of the sword, eh, Danny Boy? I mean, you yes, you know, as a musician, you can get your stuff out there fairly readily. But it's at the same time, you can get yourself stuff out there and there's no quality control.
Exactly.
Which brings us to my next point. A mutual friend of ours in Deshaun Jones. Jones, Mango Tree Music Corp exec, and Deshaun's good friend and music industry mogul, and I understand that he represents you as well. But tell me about how you first met Deshaun Jones. I've had him on the show, so people are probably familiar with him. But tell me how you first met Deshaun.
The first time I met Deshaun, I was playing with a band called the Niagara String Band, and we were sitting in the park, Montebello Park, and we had, you know, my buddy with a stand up bass. And, you know, that was a fiddle. And we were all dressed up because we always, you know, we always wore really nice old-timey clothes, you know, 40s maybe inspired suits and whatnot. And Deshaun comes strolling up. And this has got to be like 15, maybe 17 years ago or something like that. He's like, "You guys coming back from a gig, man?" And we're like, "No, we're just hanging out and playing tunes." And he was like, "Oh, you guys, you know, you guys sound good." And he wanted to help us out. And, you know, we worked together for a little while, and then that band kind of just went their separate ways. And a couple years later, I was sitting there thinking, I'm not the best businessman in the world. You know, I can play music, but there's a lot of stuff that's just really beyond me. And I need help with these things, you know. And I thought maybe I'd give him a call again and see if he wanted to work with me. And he was, thankfully, he was very, very into the idea of working together. So I feel like I couldn't do any of this stuff without him, you know. The stuff that he's done for me, he's kind of like a booking agent slash manager slash, you know, he works in like every field, and he's just such a professional too. He's helped me out a whole lot.
Talking about Deshaun Jones, Mango Tree Music, and excellent drummer in his own right, Deshaun,
yeah,
learned at his grandfather's church. He keeps the rhythm.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So that's great. So you've got somebody looking, you know, crossing the T's and dotting the I's for you. Never hurts for an artist to have somebody behind them going, okay, let's just put the little details together, make sure you get to the next gig and get those contracts straightened out, and let you be the artist. You know, I mean, that's kind of what it's all about.
You know, he could easily work with what's popular, you know, and he could go and work with rappers or whatever, you know, is popular right now. But he is very adamant that he works with kind of obscure musicians that, you know, otherwise don't really have much of a platform. And as I'm finding, honestly, there's a huge platform for the blues. And I had no idea. I mean, for the longest time, especially as a teenager, I thought I was the only one who knew anything about this music. You know, it just seemed like nobody cared. It just seemed like nobody knew anything about it. And then I'm starting to find that as I get older, there's tons of people that are into it. There's a massive group of people all over the world that love the blues, and the blues societies, and guys like you, man. You know, like people like me, we couldn't do this stuff without you guys. So it is nice that there's people out there that appreciate the blues still. And I think there always will be.
Well, something that that we all share, you, me, folks that are listening to Sean Jones, is a true love for the music. And it's a passion. And that's why we're here. And I think it shines through. And I really enjoy having you and guys like you on and showcasing your virtuosity. It's sharing that kind of insight with other musicians is the kind of information that is hard to come by for budding musicians coming up, and even for blues fans that, you know, really have an interest in. You talked about history and musicology and how it all kind of blends in. We didn't start out to be historians or musicologists, but, you know, it's the love of the music that starts to lead back to the blues, and the fascination of the stories, and they start to compound and you know, and who influenced who, you know, and how it goes down the road like that. And, you know, so we've got you coming up at some blues festivals. Let me check my cheat sheets here. Where are we? Let's see. We've got you at the Orangeville Blues and Jazz Festival. That's coming up pretty soon. And I understand another famous blues man on that bill, Danny Marks, will be on that bill. Do you know Danny?
I've heard his music. We've never met. But I always go when I see a bill with musicians on it. I always go through them all and listen to everybody, because, you know, these are all guys that play the stuff I'm into. So if I can have any, you know, it's kind of right there for you to look these guys up and find their music, which is awesome.
If you have a chance, you really want to get a chance to chat with Danny Marks. Blues historian. He was Edward Bear in the 70s. Guy opened up for Led Zeppelin. You know, guitar keyology, an album he put out around the turn of the century, was fabulous. Danny did a little Cities in Blues special on TV, which was fantastic. He did a little, you know, he'd do the Piedmont blues, he'd do the New Orleans blues, and he'd do the Delta. He'd do a little TV episode on each one of the areas, and, you know, who the heroes were and how the progression was. So Yeah, commercial for Danny Murray. So you want, if you want to check him out at the Orange Orangeville Blues and Jazz Festival, along with Danny Boy Phelan. Oh. So that's great. And you're going to be at the Kitchener.
Yeah, I'm going to be listening to Danny big time, man. I'm excited.
Yeah, pick up a copy of Guitar Keyology. That's a bit of a mind blower. I got him to autograph a copy for me way back when on a dinosaur's roamed the earth. And Kitchener Blues Festival in August. You're going to be there, yeah?
Yep. Kitchener Blues Fest. I was going to try to get up to the Nanaimo Blues Fest, but they're on the same days. And I was already booked for Kitchener, so I couldn't do both. But I really wanted to do the Kitchener Blues Fest, like, so bad. These are festivals that, you know, I've wanted to play my whole life, basically. And to get invited to them, man, it's cool. It's, you know, in the last 2 years, I've been playing with these legends, man, that I couldn't even have pictured myself beside. And all of a sudden, you know, I got some of these guys in my DMs, man. Like Kenny Blues Boss Wayne, you know, he's just a legend. And he's just one of the nicest guys I've ever met. And his musicianship is just incredible.
Danny, give us a road story. Tell me about a time where you're on the road and something didn't go just right.
Well, I kind of have two lives when it comes to the road, because I have my younger self who used to go travel all over the place and travel rough, you know, and I used to just go down to the south and stuff and kind of get around however we could. And, you know, when you're on the road like that, you see things sometimes that you kind of wish you couldn't. You know, there's guys I met down there, train hoppers that lost their legs and things like that. A lot of the train hopping kids that I met down there, unfortunately, have passed away. But, you know, now I kind of have this new life where I'm traveling legitimately and getting paid to do it. So it's kind of weird, man. I feel like I got the road experience, but it's all different now. Now I'm getting airplanes instead of freight trains.
Well, you stuck with it long enough to travel first class. Yeah, I mean, you don't have to hop the freight train anymore.
You know, as soon as my daughter was born, really, I just had to put all that stuff to rest. I couldn't travel like that anymore. I value life too much nowadays. Things change when you have a kid. Well, you know?
Well, and you know, kind of safe to say, Danny Boy, you have come full circle from the teenage Danny that valued, what was it? Whiskey? What was the other two?
Women and money. Whiskey, women, and money.
Okay, well, so now you have a wonderful woman. You have a delightful daughter. And you're not hopping freight trains.
Yeah.
And you're playing the blues.
Yep.
I would have to say congratulations are in order, sir.
Thank you, man. I appreciate it. Yeah. I've definitely overcome a lot of obstacles. And I think along the way, honestly, the music has really kept me alive through a lot of things. And without it, I don't even think I'd be alive today, because it's really been an extremely positive way for me to deal with a lot of the trauma that I've been through, you know. And the blues really in general just helps me a lot, I think, because to me the blues, it's not just music, you know, it's a philosophy and a way of life. It's a way that you live. And just listening to recordings of some of these guys like Big Bill, even not even play music, but just speak and talk about their lives and how they've gotten through things, you know, it helps me so much. I can't even explain it, really. It just, it keeps you in a positive mindset.
Okay. So I understand you're heading out to Vancouver in July. Tell me about that.
So last year we did a good tour around BC, played a whole bunch of venues, and played at a festival called 39 Days of July out on Vancouver Island in Duncan. So I'll be back there this year as well, which I'm really excited for. I got family out there, and they always put me up on their farm, so I get to spend some time with the cows. pretty nice.
The Irish eyes be smiling, yeah?
Oh, yeah.
I understand you've been nominated for an award recently. Some people have been seeing your play, and they're going to be celebrating your excellence. Tell us about that.
I think yesterday or the day before, I found out that I was nominated for the Niagara Music Awards under the Blues Artist category. So this is my first nomination for anything, you know. And I'm excited about it because, you know, I wasn't big into sports as a kid. And I kind of went through my whole life not winning at anything. So to be nominated for something is, to me, I'm just so excited about it, man. Honestly, I'm super happy. Win or not, I'm just happy to be recognized for something. So,
well, that's a real nomination, Danny. When you get a music nomination, that's not a participation award. That's a real nomination. So good for you, man. Looks good on you.
Thank you, man. Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure, man.
That's a wrap on Talking Blues. If the blues speaks to you, hit subscribe, share the show, and let's keep the tradition alive. Until next time, keep it raw, keep it real.